What's going on, everybody? Welcome to League Pass and Chill. As usual, nah, I'm weird. What's going on, everybody?
I'm weird.
Yeah.
We're all weird, bro.
What's going on, everybody? Welcome to League Pass and Chill. I'm Olgan Ulich. I am one of the three hosts with you guys today. We are down two people. Tom Hanley is not with us.
He's been sacked. Sorry, Tom.
Bye, Tom.
Lotus.
And Gutty has bronchitis, which
is a lie.
Whang.
Is it a lie? Have you seen him?
No, I've seen him. He does have bronchitis.
Is he coughing?
Yeah.
Okay.
He was sick over the weekend.
Okay.
So get better, Gutty. But that means that we have like the three best people on the pod. Myself, as I said, I'm Olgan Ulich. Hello. Ted Smith is with me.
Hello, Olgan.
And Harrison Pullinger is also with us.
Good day.
How's everyone's weekend?
Ooh, really good.
You gotta expand with that tone.
Okay. It was a good weekend. I went out on Saturday night and then to a hotel.
Yep.
With a friend. And we had a nice night.
That's so lovely. What? Harrison?
I had a really nice...
Oh, my God. Quick, Harrison, what did you do?
Really good weekend. Someone's birthday, really fun time.
Oh, great.
Yep.
Yeah.
I just stayed home and just binge-watched Dragon's Den. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. Okay.
That's all I watch now.
Netflix or...?
No, YouTube.
All right, sweet.
It's an English show.
For free.
No shit.
Yeah, they just tell English people about their inventions.
Okay, I'll watch that.
And they asked to see if they want to invest in them. It's terrific. Today in the NBA, there were 14 games. Or there is 14 games.
And they were early, man.
They were really early. Unlucky for those guys who didn't get their fantasy teams in time.
Yeah, that's why I know it was early. Yeah.
Yeah, Jono, I'm versing Jono, and he's in some strife.
Yeah.
The highlight of the day, and again, it's not finished. We're recording this on the Tuesday, but the highlight so far has been Ben Simmons. Because he just dropped what we understand is a line that's never been done in NBA history. So he had 34 points, 12 rebounds, 12 assists, 5 steals, 2 blocks in a win over the Nets. A nice comeback win, played solid D.
If you want to delve further, listeners, Olgan has written up a bit of a banger on Ben's recent scoring outbursts. And there's also a video on foxsports.com.au.
If you go watch that. Ted made that one.
Hey.
It was just a really good performance, and he's been very solid since Embiid's been gone.
4 in a row without the big fella?
4 in a row without him. They've won 5 of 7. We do have to mention that the five wins were against the Celtics initially, which was a good win, but also against the Knicks, the Bulls, one against the Kyrie-less Nets, and one against like the Kyrie-full Nets.
And they had a win against OKC, who I think were 8-2 over that same stretch. One of those two losses was against Embiid, an Embiid-less Philly.
Yep, and they lost to the Pacers too.
Which a lot of teams have been doing anyway.
So. Right, we're going to talk about them a bit later too. But this whole Ben Simmons excelling with Joel Embiid out, is this a surprise at all, or is this exactly what everyone's been talking about for the entire season?
It just cannot be a surprise, surely. Like, surely we're not still looking at this and going, wait, are they better apart? Like, the game today, Ben Simmons would take the rebound, he'd push the pace, and then just good things were happening. Like, they don't need to just throw it into the black hole of Joel Embiid near the post or forcing shitty threes from the top. He looks so good without Embiid.
Their ball movement in the second half was elite from a team basketball standpoint as well. Their last couple of buckets when the game was tight, keeping in mind that they were down by 9 points well into the third quarter, they looked like a different team the way that ball was fizzing around.
So it's the thing that naturally happens in a fourth quarter. The game slows down a little bit. So naturally that's against what Ben Simmons does really well. But the Sixers using Ben as a screener has been really, really effective. They did it today with Raul Neto and Furkan Korkmaz as the ball handlers. And I think that's something that they've just got to keep going to, because we've seen it happen in the past and it's been really effective. And it's just something that they don't go to often because they can't.
And Simmons had good chemistry with Korkmaz too today as well. They looked really good. And one more fun stat with Ben Simmons. There's only 4 players in the NBA averaging more than 15.7 rebounds, 7 assists. You got LeBron James, You got Russell Westbrook, you got Doncic, then you got our boy Ben Simmons.
Can't shoot threes though.
What a waste of space.
Don't need to if you're putting up 34, 12 and 12 and winning.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So what do you think then of the reporting that came out today that the Sixers are among the teams looking to acquire Derrick Rose in a trade?
Well, because I mean,
we saw today him next to a ball handler as the screener in a pick and roll. Imagine if that's a dynamic guard like Derrick Rose.
It almost goes against everything that everyone has been saying all year about what the Sixers need, which is they need shooters on the wing.
Yep.
They need 3-and-D players. Well, you're going to bring in a guy who's not a great defender and not a good spot-up three-point shooter. I think he's, 33, 34% on the year? Not bad, but not great. But, yeah, surely Derrick Rose is an upgrade over Neto and Korkmaz.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Korkmaz has really grown as a spot-up shooter too. Just like this little bit of confidence that he's getting over this stretch without Embiid, there's less pressure because they've been versing a bunch of trash teams. I feel like this is the sort of thing that can, you know, almost like the way Landry Shamet sort of exploded as this, you know, knockdown shooter. That's what Korkmaz was coming out of the draft.
Yeah.
I think he could totally just be that for the Sixers, and they definitely need him to be it too.
Rose, Simmons and Embiid? I don't know. I'd probably have my question marks on that.
I've got question marks too, but it's more just using Ben as a big man, and again, everything's positionless now. Using him in that sort of role, I just think really worked and works.
Well, he's huge.
He's massive.
Of course it works.
He got to the line 14 times today too, which is a season high for him.
So today's probably the most free throws he's ever made in an NBA match, I imagine.
Maybe. There was the game where he got hacked and he shot like 30 free throws.
Okay.
So maybe that was a game where he made more.
Okay.
But this was definitely his most efficient game ever.
Yeah.
Like 12 or 14 from the field.
Some really good finishes too. The Euro step in the second quarter. That's going to be one of the highlights of the week, I think. And also he's coming off, I'm not sure if you mentioned this, but he just got named Eastern Conference's Player of the Week.
Yep.
Again, without Embiid.
This is the thing that's just raising the questions again of like, is it Ben or Joel?
Okay, let's look at it. Are they more likely to win without Embiid? That's a huge question mark. Does the basketball look better? Absolutely. Is Ben Simmons easy to build around? Is it easy to identify what will make them successful if you don't have Embiid? Absolutely. Harrison and I have been banging the drum of like, you don't want to trade away someone that's potentially a top five talent, which because Simmons and Embiid, that's where their ceiling is.
Sure.
Embiid's already there, right? He's
yeah.
like third or fourth MVP voting before he got injured. Simmons, we saw what he can do. But, you know, the argument could be there, especially if they keep winning while Embiid isn't there, right?
I think the regret will just come around and bite them on the ass at some point. At some point, you're going to come up in a playoff series against Embiid or against a Simmons, and they're going to munch you. You look at this whole talk about trying to find Derrick Rose. I mean, we lost that in Fultz because we weren't patient. Yeah, okay, Derrick Rose is a better spot-up shooter. But like that dynamic ball handler, which they thought they had, they pushed the buttons too early, and now look at him. Fultz is going really well, and they're running around trying to see if Derrick Rose is the answer.
That's a weird one too, because Derrick Rose is a, I'm not going to say a borderline all-star because he's not, but he's had a very good season. He's 18
points
a game. He is what they wanted Markel Fultz to be almost.
Exactly.
Like what he's doing this season.
That's what I'm saying. You don't move on from a young player this quickly. Like, the best version of this team is where it's either Simmons running or just Embiid, but you just can't move on from them, surely.
I know. Look, I get that too, but it's the sort of thing where you say there could be regrets if they do trade one of them and then face one of them in the playoffs. I mean, what happens if they play this style of basketball forever and ever and everyone, including, I'm sure, their own like sentiments are telling them, hey, this doesn't work. Hey, having two dudes who are dominating the paint just doesn't work. Are they going to regret not making the decision?
Hindsight, eh?
Yeah.
It'll come back to bite you anyway.
Again, how long do we think Embiid's going to be out? They're going to reassess next week, I think.
Yeah. I imagine another week or two.
Well, if they keep winning, there's not going to be any rush to get him back there. They could ice him for a bit longer, but if they keep winning, these questions are going to get asked repeatedly and they're going to build momentum.
See, we say if they keep winning, but they're sitting in sixth at the moment.
They're only two games back from third though, aren't they?
Yeah. Like the East is very tight, but Indiana keep winning. They beat Denver yesterday. Boston are playing.
About to beat the Lakers.
Yeah, playing LA right now and looking really, really good. And Miami keep winning games.
Miami are a good team.
Miami's a lot of fun.
They won again today.
Mm.
Bam Adebayo is so good.
In overtime, yeah. So at some point, like, they're going to be looking uphill on the playoff climb. saying like at a series at no series with home court advantage.
So they could really enter the playoffs as a six seed.
Yeah, they're two games behind second. So
yeah, but that's the thing as well. That's very sneaky. They could enter the playoffs as a six seed, but be the second best team in the East.
If they finish six, they're facing Raptors in the first round. That'll be juicy. If it finished as it is today,
Raptors are good too.
Yeah,
Raptors are really good.
Raptors are a lot of fun. Speaking of teams that are winning lately, how about them Grizzlies?
How about them Grizzlies?
Now, Harrison, I'm not interested in getting your take on this.
because we've heard it so often. But,
it's all eight
look, about. Look, 8 out of their last 10 in the West.
They won 7 in a row.
That's no fluke.
Yeah, they did.
That's no fluke.
They did.
Some were good wins too. You go ahead, Harrison.
Ja Morant's overrated, but.
Oh, stop it. I don't know if there's a more, there's a young player who would be more fun to play with than Ja Morant. You look at him, his teammates love him. Did you see when they played Miami, he hit a corner three, turned to the Miami Heat bench and said, "Tell Kendrick Nunn, rookie of the year is fucking mine." Couple of games later, they're playing Houston. He pulls up, takes a three on James Harden's head, walks back, tells the crowd, "Tell this motherfucker about me." Ja Morant is one of the most exciting players in the NBA right now.
Yeah, it's been a really good rookie class. The last 3 years has been unbelievable. The young talents that's been introduced into this league. And, you know, Ja Morant is okay.
But
He's a freak.
It used to be that the Warriors were my league pass team just because I like to watch them play, right? The Grizzlies are probably my new league pass team.
Yes.
Because watching Ja Morant is just so much fun. And he's not just good and efficient and showing us stuff that we thought might not translate. He's so much fun to watch. His athleticism is just stupid.
His numbers are so much better than guys getting paid $25 million as well. 18 points a game, 49% from the field. Here's the kicker, 40.5 from three.
Mm-hmm.
If that improves over
his
career, it's going to be unbelievable. 3.5 rebounds for a point guard, you'll cop that. 7 assists and 1 steal as well. Mm. So there's nothing he can't do. Great, great piece of work in the draft by the Grizzlies.
Yeah, and you look at Jar's numbers, and to start the year, Taylor Jenkins came out and said that he's not going to push these young guys too much too early. Probably early January, he took the blinkers off and was just like, you know what, go. Yeah. Like, just let these guys go. They're not on minutes restrictions anymore. Jar's playing about as much as he normally would in a game. And I think over this last 10 or 11 game stretch, he's averaging nearly 20-9.
Yeah.
Shooting, you know, mid-40s from the field and high 30s from the three. He's incredible. And then in the game today, they got done by New Orleans, which was a shame. But they were down by 13, 14 points. Cut that back to 5 when they rolled with Ja Morant, De'Anthony Melton, who has
out of
been
nowhere,
an absolute shock for everyone. And Jaren Jackson at center, Brandon Clark at 4.
Dylan Brooks is contributing at 3. 23 as well. He's only a kid. It's a really exciting team. It's just that I can't get over that hurdle of it being Memphis. I used to live in Tennessee, man.
What part of Memphis, what irks you about that?
It's just screams boring to me, mutters boring quietly.
See, for me, as someone who hasn't been there, I hear Memphis and I think of
Graceland.
I think grit and grind.
Okay,
that's how
which is
it.
Boring. That was,
but this is like a different. This is like a fast grit and grind. You know, I don't know if that's just. We're just like kind of putting this grit and grind moniker over any team that's there. But I feel like it still is there, and Ja Morant sort of personifies it, and it's just a really good modern version of it.
Yeah, he's far too flashy. Like, I associate old school basketball when I hear grit and grind, like tough.
A zebra.
Defense being the most important aspect of your wins, where Morant looks like he could just be anything, right?
The thing with this team is for 82 games, no matter what, it's going to be an arm wrestle. And whether that's come because Morant just has so much to prove or because Taylor Jenkins, who I think should be in the running for Coach of the Year, he's been incredible with this Grizzlies team, whether he's pushed this whole, we have so much to prove, we're not a team that's going to bow out and be at the bottom of the lottery, we're going to be fighting for a playoff spot. Either way, every game the Grizzlies are in, it's going to be an arm wrestle.
So right now they're in the 8th spot in the West. They could really keep that. And if they make the playoffs, that'd be so good for all those young guys. And if they make the playoffs, you can probably make a guess right now that Ja Morant and Jaren Jackson Jr. could be all-stars next season. They would be in the conversation in the way that like Adebayo is this season, the way that Sabonis is this season as well, just like these dudes who just step up.
While we're on that game today, Grizzlies, who did lose to the Pelicans, and while we're talking about possible eight seeds, they're only four games back from the Grizzlies. And given that, what's that guy's name?
Starts with Z.
Injury. Yeah, Zion.
Yeah, Lauryn Hill made a song about him.
Already?
He returns on Thursday.
And given what BI has been doing, someone that I didn't rate much until this year because I didn't know what the Lakers were in terms of being able to appraise talent.
Brandon Ingram.
BI and I go way back. keeping that in mind, I saw a stat comparing Brandon Ingram at the age of 22 to Kevin Durant, and the numbers are freakishly similar. KD, 27. BI, 26. Rebounds the same at about 7. BI has more assists, but then everything else, it's so similar. And given that Zion could be coming back, I think the Pelicans are going to be really fun to watch from about March onwards.
I mean, we saw what they did today. When you've got Drew Holiday playing like he is on the offensive end, because we already know he's a known commodity on the other end, you've got Josh Hart who can make an impact. If Brandon Ingram is the kind of budding superstar that we all thought he was and could be.
Yeah.
And then Zion comes in and he's like half of what his potential tells us he should be too. Look out.
Yeah. Yeah. So, absolutely. You know, that's a good thing about the West, right? Is that all the way down to that eight seed, all the way down to teams 12, 13, because that's where the Pelicans are. Like it's an exciting battle. Whereas you compare that to the East.
That's so bad.
It's just a drop off after Philly in the sixth spot. Seventh isn't over 500. So
who's in the eighth spot currently in the East?
The Brooklyn Nets, who are 18 and 24.
Ew. While we're on the Nets, before we go on to another team that's been hot lately, Kyrie Irving today said some more words. He should just stop. So firstly, 2 days ago, I think, he sort of called out some of his teammates. Like he didn't mention some of the young players on his teams as ones who could help a potential championship Nets team. So that was an issue. Then he tried to double down on it by saying that he's a leader and he can say whatever he wants. And then today, he said some stuff about the media passing through his words and like they did with Martin Luther King because he's like...
He did. It's not like he called himself Martin Luther King, but he did compare himself to Martin Luther King, which just means that he has no idea... He doesn't understand the potential gravitas of his words. Yeah, how good's editing? That's going to be gone.
Please no.
Mike Wilborn from PTI, pardon the interruption off ESPN, watch Fox Sports. Someone whose opinion I respect a lot. He respects the opinion of Kyrie Irving, says he's a bright dude, good chat. He even describes him as intelligent, which...
I think he is.
Yeah,
I think
right. He's Harrison that. And I were discussing this upstairs. Like, I think he is intelligent, but I think he's aware that he's self-intelligent, so he thinks that he's self-aware, right? Wrong.
Yeah.
You're so wrong, dude. You've got... Oh, man. Don't compare yourself to... one of the most important figures of the 20th century when it comes to freedom, equality.
On his day too. It's Martin Luther King Jr. Day.
Yeah.
And he did say it with this toothy, dumbass grin on his face.
Yeah.
But, like, that didn't make it better. Like, I still heard the words and I was like, he genuinely thinks this.
Yeah.
Now, he's smart. I think he is intelligent. I think he thinks he's a lot smarter than he is and has probably a little bit of a messiah complex.
Yeah, he just needs to shut up.
Okay, yeah.
Sorry.
Look, most of the NBA community is saying a similar thing.
Yeah.
You're not alone.
But, you know, let's just laugh at it. I'm going to stop putting energy into what Kyrie says, I think.
Yeah, smart. Let's put energy into the Utah Jazz, who went on this 9-game winning streak on the back of Rudy Gobert and Joe Ingles.
Was Ingles their best player over that stretch?
He was their most productive player, maybe, and most efficient player easily.
But I would say he improved the most.
No question.
In that stretch, which said that maybe him being more on ball is more important to the team than the analyst thought.
Oh, yeah. Rudy Gobert is the most important player on that team and, like, an obvious all-star, I think. Just his impact on both ends is crazy. But Joe Ingles was important. Donovan Mitchell sort of stepped up as more of an off-ball role, and Mike Conley was just not there for any of it. And all of a sudden, the Jazz got into the third seed after kind of hovering outside the playoff picture for a bit.
They had a really good run. Those wins against the Bulls, Magic, Pelicans, Knicks, Hornets, Wizards, Nets. Then they had a loss to the Pelicans. I think that's the game where the game before Brandon Ingram went off, and another win against the Kings. So it's not great cattle that they're going up against.
Sure.
But they're getting it done.
But the thing about a good team is that you need to beat the teams you're supposed to beat. And I think that's important if you can do that consistently.
Well, that's how you get to the top of your conference. Like, you look at the Bucks have only lost one game to a team under 500. So
the Lakers had a terrible start to the season as far as the schedule goes.
Yeah.
But they demolished them.
Lakers have only had one loss to a team under 500. Heat, only two losses. And the pattern goes, right? The teams at the top do not lose to trash teams, not often anyway.
Yeah.
And there is something which happens mentally when a team goes on a 10-game winning streak, which is they got that swagger back, and it's like, you know what, we are the sleeping giants. We can compete with the teams at the top of this conference. And it doesn't matter who you're beating. If mentally you take the confidence into the next game, and you look at a good shooter who's on a hot streak, and that's all just confidence. Doesn't matter if there's a good defender on them or not. But yeah, Joe Ingles over that stretch, 15-5-5?
Yeah.
That's unreal.
Fair to say Ingles had a downturn last season. Wasn't as good as the 17-18 season.
Well, slightly, but more so to start this season.
Yeah.
It was a terrible start to season for him. I think he was shooting around 30% from downtown. But it was because he was coming off the bench.
Yeah.
He's coming off the bench. He didn't get into the proper rhythm. The ball wasn't in his hands as much. He didn't get the same sort of looks because he wasn't with the same sort of teammates.
And he wasn't gelling with Conley early either. Yeah. They kind of, you know, somehow were canceling each other out. But, yeah, he's back up to 41.5% from three, which is where he wants to be. But five assists, that's his average for the season. And given that it was a slow start, a lot of those numbers have been boosted over the last month. So
putting him in the pick and roll with Rudy Gobert is just awesome. Like, it's one of the best partnerships in the NBA.
Ogun, do you think, would you have to give up more to get Joe Ingles or Derrick Rose in a trade?
Joe Ingles. Joe Ingles. Derrick Rose's contract is somewhat appealing. I think he's on around $7 million this year and $7 million next year. Joe Ingles is on around, I want to say, 12 or 13 for next year
as well. He's a contested layup away from being injured for 6 months.
Jesus Christ.
He's okay. That sounds harsh, but he does have the worst track record of
injury. As in, like, the evidence
out of any star in the NBA, he's had the worst.
Right? Sure.
Obviously, I hope that that's just a joke and I'm wrong.
He is, right? The kind of guy,
but
though,
you take that into consideration when you're trading.
Any time he lands, you do shiver a bit, right? Absolutely. It's just like the nature of watching Derrick Rose play.
Yeah.
That's a good question, though. Money is obviously a thing there too, because bringing on Joe Ingles' salary for this season and next would be tough for the Sixers, because I think it's, again, 12 or 13 million. But yeah, obviously, if I'm them, I want a guy like Joe Ingles. Or, again, I don't want to stay like too Australian, but Patty Mills, a guy who, you know, during the Olympics has shown that he can come off ball screens and create for himself and others, and obviously one of the best spot-up shooters in the NBA too. Go after him.
Yeah.
Yeah, you look at this starting five for Philly, and I don't want to jump into the realms of, like, trade potentials or trade possibilities.
Not do it.
Which we do too often. But, like, something alongside a Tobias Harris package where you're bringing back a player like Joe Ingles, where, okay, you're not getting the value back in terms of the player, but you get that secondary ball carrier, you get a really, really great spot-up shooter, and you get a really good defender versus chasing a, like, I don't know, I just don't know if the Derrick Rose project is going to work, and try and think about things that would work alongside Ben Simmons and push this team over the edge.
Derrick Rose inclusion could rock the boat a bit, where you want someone that's just going to nestle into a bench spot or into a starting spot.
I get that. And the narrative is coming from the Sixers looking like they could use a ball carrier and someone who can go downhill, because the only one who can do that is Ben.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that Derrick Rose is someone who's available. We're just putting two and two together.
Yeah.
Obviously, if you can do the sort of dream trades, you'd go after heaps of different people. But I think the other question there is, and we're going to sway away from the Jazz again to go back to the Sixers, how much are they regretting Al Horford Bullock's contract and paying him that for what's essentially what, like a backup center.
They're regretting it way less now than they will be in 3 years.
Yeah.
They're still paying him $30 million in 3 years.
That's their window, right? That's the problem with Philly. That if let's say all this starting five finish their contracts in Philly, which almost never happens, especially with five blokes. But let's say it does. Their window is now and maybe next year, because you cannot win with the paying $30 million to a 36, 37-year-old that couldn't jump when he was 29. Right? He's not the most athletic. But in saying that, I think Embiid's absence could really help with Horford and his confidence and his form, because I think today, I'm not saying it was his best day in a Philly jersey, but it was one of them. Yep. He was good today. He worked well with Ben as well. And it won't be something that you can really gauge until the playoffs, because that's what they got Horford for.
It will be interesting when everything slows down in the playoffs and you do have like Embiid and Horford in there.
Yeah.
Horford is not bad defensively, right? Defending pick and rolls, he's not amazing, right? But defending the rim.
Not amazing. He's got awful. Defending a pick and roll, like in a one-on-one situation.
I don't think he's as bad as you're saying.
He's though. Fantastic. In a pick and roll situation, he looks like my dad trying to move laterally. He just doesn't have any movement. He can't recover back to the young rim-running big men that he's going to come up against in the playoffs. He looks like a straight-up disaster. And if you're planning an offense to beat the Sixers, it has to be putting Al Horford in pick and roll situations.
Yeah,
because you don't want to do that with Embiid.
Well, while we're questioning Horford's value to this Sixers team, if you're an opponent of Philly in the playoffs, are you happy that that team has Embiid and Horford, or are you like, oh shit? You know, I think the opposition, they're not going to be thrilled that they're playing those two big dudes, considering they got Ben in that lineup as well.
And Josh Richardson.
It's like, yeah, you can point out flaws to it, but when you go to the man level, like, would those teams prefer to not be facing those two behemoths in the playoffs? I think the answer is yes.
Yeah, look, I get what you're saying, but you look at what Jared Allen and Nick Claxton did today, and yeah, there's no Joel Embiid, which will be a different story come playoffs, but... And all their points essentially came off Spencer Dinwiddie and the big man in a
pick
and roll situation, throw it high to the big man, and it was a dunk under the hoop.
Yeah, but...
And we saw the same thing in Boston last year, where any time there was a point guard who could play the pick and roll successfully, they burnt the Celtics.
Okay. So side note on Claxton, Simmons was so good underneath the basket today that the Nets tried to get hard with Simmons, and it backfired in a big way. Claxton got absolutely belted. He went at Simmons full tilt.
He died, huh?
Oh, man, what a thwack. What a thwack. And Simmons kind of like didn't mean mug it, but he like stuck his chest down. I was like, what? What? What are you trying to do, boy? It was great, man. It was great.
It was a very good game today.
Yeah, it was fun to watch, man.
Oh, yeah.
Simmons with space.
Just Simmons
with basketball.
It's very.
Here we go again.
It gets frustrating, huh? Because yeah. It's like, oh, like Simmons with shooters is cool, and then it's like, oh no, our default is Simmons without shooters.
Yeah.
It's like, what are we doing?
Oh Jesus.
So speaking about trades, there was a trade this week.
Go on.
That rocked the league. I didn't even write down the like adjacent materials in the trade. I just did. It was the Portland Trailblazers giving up Kent Bazemore in exchange for Trevor Ariza. So Ken Bazemore heads to the Kings, Trevor Ariza heads to the Blazers, and then some other players.
There's two future second-round picks.
Two future Portland second-rounders well. In there. Wenyan Gabriel is a part of it. Caleb Swanigan is also a part of it.
Swanigan?
Sorry.
It was also very funny. Everyone who reported the trade didn't know how to spell Wenyan Gabriel's name. They called him Wendell Gabriel.
Which, clearly not a D in there.
So Caleb Swanigan's going from the Kings to the Trailblazers, yeah?
Yes.
And Portland drafted him and then traded him to the Kings.
Yeah.
That's weird.
No yeah. Take backs, bro.
Also, Caleb Swanigan's just a weird person to exist in the NBA today. He's like a 6'10 center.
He's like Anthony Bennett.
Ooh.
I mean,
he's Bennett's just like, lasted longer.
Fun fact, some like Canadian friends tell me that Anthony Bennett is actually just 6'4".
That's what they say.
How weird is that?
Super weird.
That's disgusting.
The Trevor Ariza to Portland was an interesting interesting trade piece.
Would have been more interesting when Ariza was good at basketball.
That's true.
Like many years ago. But that's definitely just a fallout of, oh my God, Melo plays no defense.
We love you, Melo, but come on, man.
Yeah, just like mark somebody.
Yeah.
And like we knew this was going to be a problem when they got, when they pulled him into the team originally because CJ McConnell, McCollum.
There you go.
Not a good defender. Damian Lillard. Not great. And Melo.
Yeah. Like their best defender is what, Hassan Whiteside?
Their best defense is scoring more points than the other team. That's true. That's their best defense.
And they haven't been doing that either.
No. Yeah.
And they're not going to because CJ McCollum's out with an ankle injury now. They've been burnt by injuries all season.
And again, it highlights how competitive the NBA is in the Western Conference because this team was obviously in the conference finals this year. Haven't fallen off too much in terms of...
like personnel.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But on the ladder...
It is very interesting that we may not see the Blazers. Just imagine not seeing Damian Lillard in the playoffs. This dude has two walk-off series-winning shots.
Yeah, well, it's Memphis. That's who they'll be battling with. How do you feel, HB? You confident, mate?
No.
I think off the top of my head, they're about three or four games back. So,
from
the Grizzlies.
I think I'd rather the Grizzlies be in the playoffs just for like the future of the league. I think that's a helpful thing.
For sure. New Orleans or Memphis to scrape into that eighth spot would be fantastic.
That'd be so much fun.
Yeah.
Imagine if it was Lakers-Pelicans as like the 1-8. Come on.
Watch it be the Spurs. Watch the Spurs get the eighth spot. Watch it happen. They're in ninth, dude.
I know. They were in the eighth spot until the Grizzlies passed them. But just like the idea of seeing like AD against the Pelicans in the playoffs with all the dudes that LeBron wanted to get out of there.
I'm pretty sure Pop not being in the playoffs is the fourth sign of the Armageddon.
Yeah, so shit.
He best make it.
So look, let's talk about the Pacers then. Because they're a team that... That was my terrible segue.
It wasn't great.
We saved it.
Thank you. So right now they're... I don't have the standings.
28-15, 10 games behind the first place Bucks.
So they're... Jesus, the Bucks are good. Yeah. We should talk about the Bucks more. And Giannis is having like a historic season too. But they're in a tiny market. So wee.
No, they're just boring. Like just outside Giannis, you just kind of like, yeah, it's what we keep yelling that we want Ben Simmons for, but then Milwaukee has that and we're like, eh. We don't really care. You guys just keep winning. We'll see you in April.
Because Chris Middleton is their second best player.
In our defense, we didn't talk a buttload about Golden State last year either. You know,
it was just
because their winning was formulaic.
Sure. Right?
It just kept on happening.
Sure. But the Pacers are a team that is looking very, very interesting because Malcolm Brogdon started the season extremely well, had a tiny lull. It wasn't a drop off, but it was like a little bit of a dip. But now I think he's sort of back to where he was. Domantas Sabonis is an all-star without question. I think dropped a triple double against the Nuggets yesterday. And they just have all the looks of a really good, gritty playoff team who still have Oladipo to come.
Yeah, well, I remember him.
He's been out for over a year.
Yeah.
With a quad tear?
Mm. Yeah. Recording fat tunes in his studio.
He's a very good singer.
He's talented.
Good
singer.
Play
basketball, but come on, dude.
Or did you say he won the Masked Singer in the US? You know that show that was here that was really bad?
You can't win that, can you?
Yeah. He was the one that was like ended. Like he was the one that was in every single week.
But then Oladipo was in there and was like, we need a winner. And it's you. He's good.
I didn't think you could win it. I thought you just...
Don't look at me while you talk about it like I watched that show, please. Go on, man.
The Pacers, though, do we... With Oladipo back, assuming he comes back, hopefully, by the All-Star break, maybe, are they a threat in the East?
Not to win it. They could get to the Eastern Conference Finals, but could they knock off one of the big boys? You know, that's why they play the games. You can never rule it out, but, you know, gun to my head, can the Pacers win the NBA? I'm saying no.
So we get what the Bucks are, right? They're extremely known as a commodity. But I'm talking more like the Sixers, Raptors, Celtics tier.
Yeah, well, that's the thing, right? They'd have to get past two or three of those teams, and that's why I don't think they could do it. Could they upset Celtics? Yes. Could they upset Philly? Yes. Could they upset three the three of the big guns in the East, that's what I can't get past.
And they could also be a team that plays four really, really amazing games and gets swept.
Yeah,
that's true.
Like, they might lose by one four times in a row and get swept. They're one of those teams where, yeah, they've got a lot of talent on there and they're a really good regular season team. Nate McMillan has done an excellent job defensively with a bunch of guys that aren't defensive first players, like Sabonis. Like, he had a glaring weakness when he was in Oklahoma, and that was his defense. He's fine.
Connor reminds me of the 14-15 Hawks, who just overachieved all season. Yeah. And it was like, yeah, this is nice, but when it gets real, you know, that's all you're going to be, a nice team and a nice story.
Yeah, and I don't think we've seen enough from them yet, and there will be some massive growing pains and people start writing them off when Oladipo comes back.
Yep.
Because Brogdon has been so successful with the ball. Sabonis as a second playmaker has been incredible. Now Sabonis will be third, Oladipo
will
be first or second.
Their focal point completely changes.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah.
There will be some big growing pains, and then I think we'll start seeing who this team really is. And if it is Oladipo before he got injured, and everything else is clicking the same way, then yeah. Yeah,
bada bing, bada
they
bang.
Could be a real team in the East. But until we know, I feel like they could be an early out.
Yeah, but at, like you were saying, your first point, it's great to have a team like that.
Yeah.
In the NBA and in the playoffs, because it means it's going to be exciting from round one. So. Mm.
They sort of remind me of the old school Grizzlies teams, the sort of grit and grind ones where it's
That's
like
fair.
You guys are very good and you have good pieces. You're not going to win it all, but like, you could win two games against one of the contenders.
Yeah, see, I was going to say that they're not a far shot away from the Paul George, Danny Granger, Roy Hibbert paces, which you just kind of like, it's going to be tough.
Roy Hibbert! I remember him.
Like, it's going to be tough and it's going to be physical, but like, are you going to beat the Heat? Are you going to beat the Bulls? Yeah.
No, you can grind your way to two wins in a series.
Yeah.
Four wins is tough.
Four wins is a lot.
Man. Roy Hibbert's a throwback.
Yeah. Roy Hibbert's a huge throwback.
Remember their playoff series when they scored like 70 points?
Mm.
Yeah.
Ew.
And but were competitive.
It's great basketball, but
they were the best team in the East.
Yeah.
And then LeBron was like, nah.
Yeah.
Danny Granger too. Shit. Batman, yeah?
Oh my god.
Look. That's all we've got for you guys today. I was going to come up with our quick fire question answers, but I forgot. So I thought of one just now.
I've got one after it.
Okay.
You go first.
Thank you. If you had, and this is, all of them seem to start with this. If you got to have a player for the next 5 years, Ja Morant or Zion Williamson?
Oh, I like money, so Zion.
What do you like, Harrison?
Harrison likes money more than me, bro. Yeah, just from what we saw in preseason, I've got to say Zion. But, man, he's one more injury away to me locking in.
That's how you know Zion's good. If you're picking Zion over Ja, that's how you know that dude's the real deal right there.
I'm not ready to say Ja Morant's not going to win MVPs.
Yeah, no. I don't. That's not. Yeah. Also,
lots of competition coming up within, though.
Yeah.
Like, you know. Tatum probably won't win one, but he could.
Ingram?
He could.
Yeah.
Nah.
Ben Simmons.
Real quick as well, before you give us your one, Ted, what does Zion have to do for the remainder of this season to steal Rookie of the Year away from Ja Morant?
Everything.
Is it possible?
Like 22-9? I don't even think that's enough. Right. I reckon it would have to be like 25-12.
Be a top 10 player in the NBA. That's what he'd have to do.
If he comes back and is very, very good and the Pelicans take the 8th spot and the Grizzlies don't, maybe there's a shout there. But I think he'd have to be.
And if he comes back and after 2 weeks, it's clearly his team and not Ingram's. That also would help. But it's too much.
Too much.
Too much to do, bro. You ready for my question?
Yeah.
So you got 1 year. And the whole 82 games, you got a team that could challenge for the title. Your point guard, you get to choose. It's only for 1 year.
Sure.
Chris Paul. And they're both injury-free for the entire year. Chris Paul or Kyrie Irving? I know who a better basketball player is in a vacuum, but when you consider it's team basketball and those basketball players are humans that have to deal with.
I don't even like either of them as leaders either.
Yeah, but that's what I'm saying. Chris Paul's better. That's how bad Kyrie is, right? I'd go Chris Paul. To me, it's not even a conversation.
Yeah.
It's not even a chat.
I think it's Chris Paul easy.
That's what I think. And that's how no one would have said that after he made that three in the finals, right?
Dang. No, well, that's the thing. That three,
on earth.
That three changes his narrative.
Yeah, it changed the narrative in his head too. Made him think he was something he's not.
Harrison also agreed with the Chris Paul, by the way. He was just nodding,
yes.
Forgetting that this is a podcast.
That's cool. Fair public shaming. Apologies.
I'll edit it out.
Thank you. That's all we got for you guys. If you like what you heard, head to your favorite podcast app, whatever you're listening
if
on
you
right
didn't,
now.
What's wrong with you, man?
What's wrong with you? Come on, guys. You know, rate, review, subscribe, all that jazz. Tell your friends about us. Follow us on the Twitters and on all of our social medias. We're kind of fun there.
Yeah.
We promise Ted's going to start using Twitter.
I'm on the Facebook.
Hey. That's all we got for you guys. We'll see you next week.
Thank you, Algan.
Bye.
Bye.
The brand new Professor and Barney podcast. It's really popular.
Big response in New Zealand from the first one, I assume?
Huge response. It was actually a record listening. It was a record for listening.
Wow. Each week, a new episode, and every episode, a new topic inspired by a current sporting affair. The latest, cheating. Thanks to the Houston Astros.
I guess today's all about cheating.
We're going to look at the best and worst cheaters that have ever sort of graced the sporting landscape.
Great. And we're going the quirky and the weird. So if you've tuned in to hear about Lance Armstrong or Marion Jones, it's not going to happen. We've dug deep. It's going to be some weird shit.
Lawsuits not required.
Yeah. I wanted to talk for a second about the psychology of cheating.
Barney, I think it's important.
Mate, you and I have just been on a two-day trip away together. My missus doesn't need you talking through the psychology of cheating first. Thanks
well, I wanted to
much.
Ask you, Barney, what were you doing when I walked in that room? My God.
This is more of an intervention podcast.
Please search for the Professor and Barney podcast and hit subscribe wherever you do your listening.